All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. Happy Monday, everybody. Today is November 17th, 2025. Before we get into the top story of the day, there's something I have to get off my chest. I just gotta get it out there. Look, for the last 2 years, 2 months, and 2 weeks, I have been talking an awful lot about the AI bubble, the AI mania, starting with the CoreWeave videos back in the summer of 2023, and consistently throughout this ridiculous episode that will surely go down in history as a case study in human stupidity and greed. There has been one consistent theme. I have had no position in any AI-related stocks this entire time, up to and including NVIDIA. On Friday afternoon, that changed. I have put my money where my mouth is. Look, for all this time, I have been unwilling to short a mania, because shorting a mania is basically standing in front of a freight train and betting your life that it's going to stop. You can be right and still end up a pancake. And so for 2 years, I've stayed out of that. I finally pulled the trigger on an NVIDIA short on Friday. Look, guys, this is a risky trade. I'm not a trading service. I don't recommend anybody follow my trades. That's not what I do here. There's plenty of a-holes on Twitter who will charge you $25 a month to copy their trades. Go ahead, have fun with them. They're all going to put you in the same five stocks. Just getting this off my chest, and I'm just putting it out there, mostly to CYMIA. I am now short NVIDIA, so from this point on, anything I say, you have to at least keep that asterisk next to it and understand I have a financial interest in the direction that stock moves. But look, there's this article in the Wall Street Journal this morning talking about how Wall Street is just piling money into this data center bubble. See if you can spot a couple of psychological red flags in that article. Also, Peter Thiel has also sold out all of his NVIDIA stock now. He joins Masa-san over at SoftBank, who last week sold all of his position in NVIDIA stock, ironically, to raise the cash needed to buy NVIDIA's chips. So you got another high-profile billionaire dumping those shares. Also interesting this morning, and to kind of counter that bearish AI news, you got a story that Berkshire Hathaway, one of the last actions that Warren Buffett took at the helm at Berkshire Hathaway, was to buy Google stock or Alphabet stock. They actually saw that as a value play. That's interesting. And now the big story this morning, the one that's really, it had me grinding my teeth all weekend. Former Federal Reserve Governor Adriana Kugler, she kind of had people scratching their heads over the summer. She resigned very abruptly for personal reasons, of course. And this was all right around the time, all the controversy about Lisa Cook and mortgage fraud and how the Trump administration was charging after her and trying to get her to resign and really just wanted the lower interest rates. He wanted his rate cuts. He was trying to force it and stack the Fed with sycophants who do whatever he says. And when Kugler resigned abruptly, a lot of people apparently correctly surmised that there was some kind of reason for that, that there was like either she was being blackmailed or she had done some kind of fraud too. Who knows what? Fed governors don't just abruptly resign in the middle of their term for no reason, especially when she only had a few months left in her term. Well, we found out why. She was caught trading stocks. And you might be like, oh, well, what's the big deal? A lot of people trade stocks. Yeah, when you're a Fed governor and you directly control the value of stocks by pumping liquidity into the stock market or into the bond market, thus inflating the stock market while making everybody else poor at the same time, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to financially benefit from that. You're not allowed to trade individual stocks. Every Fed governor knows this. All right. It's not like we're like, oh, I didn't know that was against the rules. This is a highly sophisticated, specialized position of immense power. Trust me, these people know the freaking rules. They break them anyway. She was caught trading several individual stocks, including during the Fed's blackout period, which is a few days before and after the FOMC, when the stock market moves rather dramatically based on what the Federal Reserve does. She broke the rules. She asked Jerome Powell for a free pass on it. Powell, to his credit, rejected that and submitted her to the ethics board for review or whatever, and she resigned. What the hell? You know, there's all these people who are out there, these sell side guys on CNBC who are always like, oh, you know, the Federal Reserve needs to be careful of their credibility, and we wouldn't want to damage the credibility of the Federal Reserve. Yeah, you know, after the whole like transitory thing, when you put everybody in the poorhouse by causing inflation, and then half the Fed FOMC was caught insider trading stocks, two of them had to resign over that. We're not even, what, 2 years removed from that fiasco, and now we've got another one? It's almost like we're better off not having a Federal Reserve. You know, like the first, what, 140 or 150 years of this country's history when we didn't have a Federal Reserve, we made it. We were okay. We survived. It wasn't pandemonium, hell on earth, dog and cats living together. Maybe we should just not have one. Imagine if you weren't forced to play in a casino because your savings was being slowly made worthless by a bunch of unelected bureaucrats who make themselves rich at your expense. Just imagine. Maybe we could get a John Lennon song about that. Last Friday, we had a little bit of a Friday news dump on Friday. It went largely unnoticed outside of FinTwit. FinTwit is all over everything. I love those guys on FinTwit. People knock it all the time. FinTwit is freaking awesome. The New York Federal Reserve got together with the bank executives last week very quietly to discuss their short-term lending facility, otherwise known as the standing repo facility. And if you guys don't know, the standing repo facility, that is just basically like this open door, the revolving door of liquidity that the Federal Reserve set up a few years ago and said, hey, bank, if you get in trouble, no problem. You don't have to sell your bonds or anything like that. Don't dump assets on the market and cause a panic. Just lend them to us for a couple of days. We'll give you cash to get you by. And then in a few days, we'll swap back. It's called the standing repo facility. And it's one of the ways the Federal Reserve injects money into the market because they typically use freshly printed cash for those repurchase agreements. Well, the Fed got together with all the banks on Friday and said, hey, I just want to remind all you guys that we have this thing, that it's there, that you can all use it. And we also want to assure you that large scale usage would not be problematic. What? Why would banks suddenly need large scale usage of the standing repo facility? Let me translate, guys. The Federal Reserve is worried about a liquidity event. We have all seen the reverse repo come all the way down. That's excess liquidity in the market has gone up in smoke. The Fed has stopped or is about to stop their quantitative tightening recently. We did see an uptick in standing repo facility usage at the end of October, a little bit of a spike on Halloween. And we saw some use of the Fed's discount window. Now the Fed is having a meeting reminding the banks, if you guys need to take a whole boatload of money out of the standing repo facility, that'd be just fine by us. Somebody sees a liquidity event coming, and the Fed is just ready to spin up that money printer on a moment's notice. What else we got here? A foreclosure spike in the United States. Hey, you know, while we're talking about the Federal Reserve endlessly pumping asset prices while putting people in the poorhouse and insider trading stocks, while that's all going on, we have this fun story about a 20% year-over-year increase in foreclosures in the United States. Thanks to real estate analytics firm Adam, they're putting out that there was a 20% year-over-year increase in foreclosures, still nowhere near 2008-2009 levels, but a 20% year-over-year rise is still significant. Affordability is the problem. Big increases in home insurance and property taxes are causing people to miss mortgage payments and foreclose on their house. Florida is the state leading. Also, states like Tennessee and Nevada are seeing that, as people can't afford life. And that's why it kind of sucks that these Fed governors are trading stocks, getting rich at our expense while all that's going on. We've also got China and Japan are going at it over Sanae Takaichi's recent comments about Taiwan. The Chinese seem to have their panties in a bunch over that one. Screw them if they can't take a joke. India's trade deficit has hit a new record on the 1-2 punch of tariffs, causing a reduction in their exports, while a surge of imports as Indians piled into gold and silver caused a blowout in their trade policy. That story intersects with a couple of big recent events. We've got Jeff Gundlach, aka the Bond King, is out on TV warning about garbage lending in reference to private credit. Something we have been talking about a lot on this channel as well. And we have more Epstein BS going on today. I can't tell you how sick I am of this story. The Epstein story has devolved into pointless political theater. Unless they are going to release everything all at once, I don't want to hear anything about it. Release it all and be done with this BS. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. As always, hey, how about that like button? And you new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come on back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is red for the morning, down 15 points ahead of the opening bell, about a quarter of a percent lower. We've got the Dow is down 0.14%, just barely in negative territory, off by 88 points. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, off by 70 points or 0.28% to the downside. DXY is a little bit stronger this morning, 99.46. That's up by 16 basis points. Keep an eye on that yen, guys. We're seeing borrowing costs in Japan are rising, and we are seeing the yen weaken as they're talking about stimmy checks and helicopter money in Japan. That's putting a little bit of pressure on the dollar, as well as the collapse of the British pound and the emerging budget crisis that we have going on in the UK. Looking over at the bond market this morning, we've got a little bit of red on the long end and some green on the short end. The 30-year Treasury is at 4.736. That yield is lower by one basis point this morning. The 10-year's at 4.134, off by a point and a half. The 2-year's at 3.606, off by almost one basis point. And the 1-month is at 3.966, off higher by a half a point for the 1-month Treasury. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got mostly red this morning. Gold is down here. Spot gold is at $4,073, off by about $6 or 0.15%, essentially unchanged. The December front month gold contract is at $4,074. That's down by almost $20 or a half a percent. Looking over at silver, we've got spot silver in London is a little bit higher here, $50.67. That's up by 11 cents or a quarter of 1%. Meanwhile, your New York silver price, the December COMEX future, is at $50.46. That's lower by 22 cents or 0.44%. The spread is now about 21 cents more expensive for silver now in London versus silver next month in New York. Keep an eye on that spread, guys. That is indicative of some supply stress, although nowhere near where we were back in the middle of October. Hey, but you know what? I still like the shiny. Copper is lower by 1%. Platinum is also lower by 1%. Palladium is down by about 1.7%. And crude oil is higher by a dime this morning, 0.7% higher, $60.03 for January WTI futures. Also in the commodity space, we've got kind of an interesting story here. Indonesia to start charging gold export duties to build up stockpile. Now, this might cause a little bit of supply stress in the gold markets. Emphasis on a little bit here. Indonesia is about 4 to 5% of annual gold mine production, and they're putting this tax on exporting gold out of the country. So what's going on here? It looks like India wants to build up a full, like, beginning-to-end gold supply chain within the country, and they're trying to use taxes to do it. In the case of gold, the government aims to push major miners like PT Freeport Indonesia to build onshore refineries and develop a bullion banking system to lure more gold into its financial markets. Global gold prices are currently rising, so we must ensure that as much gold supply as possible is available domestically, not only for downstreaming, but also for the bullion bank ecosystem that we are building in the country, said Kakarabu. I don't know if I said that right. At a parliamentary hearing about tactics to raise state revenue. So this is some protectionist trade policy here, may cause a little bit of a shock in gold supply chains. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, we're a little bit lower. We had some selling over the weekend. $94,121 is priced on Coinbase. That's lower by, showing lower by about $40 over the last day or so. We sold off a few thousand here over the weekend, guys. Watch that level right around 93,000. That's been support for the last day or so. Crypto's not looking so good here. The altcoins are selling off even harder here. We've done the whole diatribe about crypto winter. We don't need to talk more about that. But I saw a pretty hilarious one from Polymarket this morning. Shout out to my moderator, Mish, who says, Justin, McDonald's sees record surge in job applicants as crypto market continues freefall. Okay. Thanks, Polymarket. Appreciate that one. I'm not sure these two stories are related, but when you put them together, it is kind of hilarious. And then we've got the, yeah, there's our There's our lizard guy, not looking so good there. It's been rough. As always, guys, be careful on leverage. And also, Netflix shares are crashing this morning. Oh my God, what happened? Look, down 90%, only $111. It's a 10-for-1 split, guys. That's all. That's why Netflix is deep in the red. Nothing really happening here. It's actually, the stock is down 0.5% ahead of the opening bell. Netflix had a split. Nothing to see here. All right, let's talk about the main story going on this morning. Wall Street blows past bubble worries to supercharge AI spending frenzy. See if you can spot some red flags in the language that's being used in this article here. Firms such as Blue Owl Capital have raised trillions in investing firepower. The artificial intelligence build-out is a perfect match. The warning signs are flashing. Not long ago, Blue Owl was an upstart investment firm that lent money to mid-sized U.S. companies such as Sara Lee Frozen Bakery. These days, the firm is financing massive data centers costing tens of billions of dollars for the likes of Meta and Oracle, a sign of just how quickly Wall Street has become the enabler of America's artificial intelligence boom, largely using your money, by the way. Fund managers such as Blue Owl amassed trillions of dollars of investing firepower and have been hunting for big deals where they can put that money to work. They found slim pickings for years until a perfect match appeared in AI, which has provided a bigger target than anything in history due to the vast sum tech companies need to ramp up computing powers. We're talking about numbers that are so large, even in the low cases, said Blue Owl co-founder Mark Lipschultz. Does it even matter if you keep counting after you get to $1 trillion of capital expenditure in the next couple of years? All right. So you say, hey, the numbers are so big, we don't even care how big they get. Oh, if only there were signs there's bubble. Does it even matter if you keep counting? Says a guy who wants people to hand over their money to them so he can invest it wisely and prudently. And of course, very carefully, says, does it even matter how much I spend on this shit? Last week's sell-off in tech-related stocks and bonds marked some of the most serious warning signs that the frenzy could be overdone. But any worries on Wall Street about a possible investment bubble have largely been trumped by the fear of being left behind. Now, why would they say the fear of being left behind? There's actually a popular phrase that is a self-contained cautionary tale about bubble investing that sounds very similar, Wall Street Journal. It's called fear of missing out. And it's, well, the same thing, isn't it? But no, Wall Street Journal doesn't want to make it so obvious that this is a bubble, largely because Wall Street Journal is sell-side research, and they tell people don't listen to Twitter randos, and they file copyright strikes against YouTube channels that call them out for it. Besides all that, no, fear of being left behind. It's certainly not fear of missing out. It's a totally different set of words entirely, and it polls much better in focus groups, apparently. Reading on here, some of the financing is coming from plain vanilla corporate bond sales, but financiers are making far bigger fees off giant private deals. Virtually every Wall Street player is angling to get a piece of the action, from banks such as JP Morgan Chase and Morgan Stanley to traditional asset managers such as BlackRock. So they're helping themselves to generous fees to invest other people's money that they can't even count in a FOMO trade. They don't care. They're getting their fees and then dumping it into people's 401ks. Investor appetite for data center debt is so strong that some money managers have booked billion-dollar gains in a matter of days. Even before construction of the facilities, their financing is complete. No red flags there, right? Debt instruments rising in value by billions of dollars in days before you even break ground on the project that they're supposed to be financing. That's a totally normal phenomenon and not at all indicative of, say, people who don't care how much of other people's money they're investing in their self-admitted FOMO trade. Certainly not an indicator of anything going on there, right? You're supposed to make billions of dollars in days on debt instruments. No, you're not supposed to. Still, the longer-term performance is hardly assured. Big tech companies are expected to spend nearly $3 trillion on AI through 2028, but only generate enough cash to cover half that tab, according to analysts at Morgan Stanley. All right, so after the thing about, like, we can't even count how much money we're wasting and the FOMO, and then, okay, we're doing creative financing, collecting fees for it, and then, oh, yeah, we're marking up these things arbitrarily by billions of dollars days after we close the deals. Oh, yeah, at the end of the day, none of this shit makes any money. Nothing to see here. No worries, right? I'm sure it's going to be great. Good God, if only there were signs. He's got more red flags in that article than a parade of Chinese youth. Meanwhile, in Market Watch, we've got first SoftBank, and then Peter Thiel dumps NVIDIA's position as talk of AI bubble intensifies. All right, so while they use your money to buy this stuff and finance this build out, the billionaires, they're selling the stocks. Nothing to see here. A week after Japan's richest man disclosed that his firm fully divested his $5.8 billion stake in NVIDIA, one of America's richest, Peter Thiel, has said he's done the same. Given his status as one of the most influential tech investors, the announcement has done little to dispel notions that artificial intelligence stocks are in a bubble or have peaked. No, they have done little to dispel the notions. You're right. They've actually reinforced the notion that it's in a bubble because the billionaires are selling the stock. Thank you very much, MarketWatch, who's owned by the same Dow Jones company that told you not to listen to Twitter randos and that owns the Wall Street Journal that filed a copyright strike against my channel. Nice sell-side research you got going there, MarketWatch. In its 13F filing for the quarter ended September 30th, Thiel's hedge fund, Thiel Macro LLC, revealed it had sold all 537,742 shares it held of NVIDIA. This position represented 40% of the fund's total equity holdings, which now stand at $74 million, down from the $212 million at the end of June. At the same time, Thiel Macro disclosed it had also sold around a quarter of its holding in Tesla, although Elon Musk's company is now the portfolio's largest position at 39%. So we got billionaires dumping AI stocks. We got Wall Street FOMOing in. Yeah. Again, guys, full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. All right. It's not all bearish news. We've got some buying going on in the AI stocks here. Alphabet stock gets a Buffett bump. Here's the next big Google catalyst. Anticipation is building for Google's Gemini 3.0 release, which analysts say could advance the company's AI positioning. Alphabet stock has benefited from changing investor perceptions this year. For one, the stock has transformed from an artificial intelligence loser to an artificial intelligence winner in the eyes of Wall Street. All the while, the stock's multiple seemingly caught the attention of Warren Buffett, who recently disclosed third quarter purchase of Alphabet shares suggested they can be, or at least recently could have been, thought of as a value play. While Alphabet stock has a forward price to earnings ratio of about 25x, that multiple was below 20x for much of the third quarter. It's unclear when exactly in the period Berkshire Hathaway bought the stock. So Google stock is doing pretty good this morning off of this news. Let's refresh this, get an accurate mark. Currently up about 2.88%. It was up over 4% on this news this morning, but it has since come down. We've got a market-wide sell-off going on ahead of the opening bell. $284.93 for Google shares, off by $8 here. Meanwhile, let's talk about this one here. Adriana Kugler. Oh, yeah. Who could have seen this one coming? Ex-Fed Governor Kugler resigned after violating trading rules. How many Fed governors have violated the trading rules now? Why don't we just assume all of them? Because it's now such a significant percentage that I think the only safe way is to just assume they're all doing it. Former Fed Governor Adriana Kugler, whose abrupt resignation allowed President Donald Trump to install an ally at the U.S. Central Bank, violated Fed ethics rules and was subject to an internal probe when she stepped down in August, documents released Saturday showed. In her final weeks at the Fed, Kugler sought to address a problem with her financial holdings, but Chair Jerome Powell denied her request for a necessary waiver ahead of the central bank's July 29th to 30th policy meeting, according to a Fed official. She skipped the meeting and announced her resignation days later. Not only was she breaking the rules rather blatantly, she actually asked for a free pass from Jerome Powell. Thank God Powell didn't grant it. The Office of Government Ethics on Saturday released Kugler's latest financial disclosures, which included previously undisclosed trading in multiple individual stocks in 2024, some of which occurred during the Fed's blackout period in violation of the agency's ethics rules. Fed ethics officials referred the matter to the agency's inspector general earlier this year, the forum showed. They also declined to certify the disclosures, which Kugler filed about a month after her resignation. An IG spokesperson said Saturday that an investigation is ongoing. It wasn't the first time Kugler had run afoul of the Fed's ethics rules. She acknowledged in disclosures last year that she violated prohibitions on trading when her husband executed several stock trades. Kugler said at the time that her spouse made the purchases without her knowledge. Yeah, okay. The shares were later divested, and Kugler was deemed in compliance with applicable laws and regulations, according to the disclosures. Okay, we illegally bought this stock before we made these decisions that inflated their values, and then we sold the stock at a profit. Now we're in compliance with ethics rules. That's what they're telling us. All right, sure. The newly released documents showed previously undisclosed trading in 2024 in individual stocks, which is prohibited for Fed officials and their immediate family members, including Material East NV, Southwest Airlines, Cava Group, Apple, and Caterpillar. Some of the trades were also executed during blackout periods when transactions are prohibited. This lady was breaking the rules with no regard whatsoever. Honestly, how do these people not get prosecuted? How do we just allow them to resign? Oops, sorry, we broke these rules. Rules that would get any other common pleb prosecuted and thrown in jail and audited and their life ruined. But oops, sorry, I'm just going to play dumb and get away with it. I had no idea it was against the rules that, of course, were drilled on day in and day out. Gotta love it. Again, maybe we just shouldn't have a Fed. What a concept. Meanwhile, the New York Fed met with banks over key lending facility. This story broke late on Friday when I think they were hoping nobody was paying attention. New York Federal Reserve President John Williams met with Wall Street banks this week to discuss a key short-term lending facility, a New York Fed spokesperson told Reuters. President Williams convened the New York Fed's primary trading counterparties or primary dealers to continue engagement on the purpose of the standing repo facility as a tool of monetary policy implementation and to solicit feedback that ensures it remains effective for rate control, the spokesperson said. Wait, rate control? That sounds a lot like yield curve control. That's interesting. An unelected group of bureaucrats manipulating interest rates. Okay. But remember, we have free and fair markets, right? Roberto Perli, the official responsible for implementing monetary policy, said on Wednesday that firms needing to use this central bank standing repo facility should tap it when needed, adding that large-scale usage would not be problematic. Why would they say that unless they were anticipating the need for large-scale usage? Hey, guys, don't worry. We're standing by, ready to pump hundreds of billions of dollars of freshly printed money into the bond market in order to keep you afloat and keep asset prices higher, at least until Adriana Kugler's done selling them all. I may have ad-libbed that last bit a little bit there. The Financial Times first reported on Wednesday, which took place on the sidelines of the Fed's annual Treasury market conference on Wednesday. Ahead of the Fed's policy meeting in October, rising money market rates and upward drift of the federal funds rate and the use of the standing repo facility all signaled tightening market liquidity. I had an interview with Joe Brown a couple of weeks ago where we were talking all about that. The standing repo facility allows eligible financial firms to turn bonds into cash quickly and acts as a shock absorber for market liquidity needs. Adopted in 2021, the tool has had Adopted in 2021, the tool had until late mostly gone unused. It had mostly gone unused because the reverse repo was getting used because there was all of that extra money that they printed in 2020 and 2021 that they never should have printed sloshing around in the system. That is now gone. The reverse repo has gone back to zero. And since the reverse repo has gone to zero, we've started to see just some minor usage in the standing repo facility getting used. And of course, that spike at the end of October, that one kind of set off some alarm bells for people. Apparently, that was just window dressing. It's come back down, but still, we're having some occasional usage of this, only single digit billions. But the Fed just wants you to know, if you guys need a few hundred billion, we're ready to print it and give it to you. Just say the word. Meanwhile, as the Federal Reserve inflates asset prices with printed money, more Americans are losing their homes as foreclosures jump 20%. What's driving it? On top of surging homeowners insurance premiums, property taxes are also pushing up people's costs and putting pressure on their ability to cover basic expenses. But don't worry, guys, inflation is totally under control. Foreclosures filings shot up nearly 20% in October from a year ago, highlighting a growing pocket of distress in the housing market. Nearly 37,000 properties in the U.S. had a foreclosure filing in October, according to a new report by Adam, a property data provider. Foreclosure filings include default notices, scheduled auctions, or bank repossessions. Though October's foreclosure activity was still well below historic highs, The overall pattern over the last 8 months indicates that an increasing number of homeowners are struggling with their mortgages. Florida, where housing markets that boomed during the pandemic are now seeing home values fall, has emerged as the top hotspot for foreclosures. Missed mortgage payments are the latest sign that homeowners are facing financial pressures on multiple fronts. On top of surging homeowners insurance premiums, property taxes are also pushing up people's costs and putting pressure on their ability to cover basic expenses. Home insurance premiums alone have jumped nearly 50% over the last 5 years, according to a joint study by Thumbtack and Zillow. These numbers confirm what households across the country already feel. America faces a deepening cost of living crisis, said Alana McCargo, a non-resident fellow at the Urban Institute and the former president of Ginnie Mae, told MarketWatch. So look, we had my buddy Travis from Real Estate Mindset and Mitch Vexler on the channel last week to talk all about how property taxes are driving people out of their homes and how they were fighting property taxes, trying to get this situation under control. Now we're seeing a 20% jump in foreclosures, driven mostly by, well, insurance and property taxes. And look, property taxes, when you're in a housing bubble and they raise your property taxes, that is nothing more than a tax on unrealized capital gains. It is confiscation of wealth. It's not an income tax. You don't have any income because you haven't sold it. They're just taking your shit. That's all it is. It's not fair. It's certainly not constitutional. And well, we're seeing a jump in foreclosures because of it. In international news today, we've got China and Japan are going at it. China escalates Japan spat with threats of economic retaliation. China is escalating its confrontation with Japan over Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi's comments on Taiwan, with state media threatening major countermeasures after Beijing's travel warnings raised the specter of economic retribution. Let's see if we can pronounce this one. Yuan Tenshan, a social media account linked to China's state broadcaster and frequently used to signal official policy, published a commentary over the weekend warning that Beijing has made full preparations for substantive retaliation. The Post hinted at imposing sanctions, suspending economic and diplomatic and military ties, and restricting trade as forms of potential reprisal. What military ties do the Japanese and the Chinese have? I digress. Hours after the Post, the People's Liberation Army Daily reinforced that message, publishing a commentary by state-affiliated scholar warning that if Japan's military got involved in the Taiwan Strait, the entire country would risk becoming a battlefield. The diplomatic crisis erupted over Takaichi's comments earlier this month that military force used in any Taiwan conflict could be considered a survival-threatening situation, a classification that would provide a legal justification for Japan to support friendly countries that choose to respond. China is highly sensitive to remarks around Taiwan, the self-ruled island that it has vowed to claim someday by force if necessary. And let me just say this. First of all, welcome to all the adorable little Chinese cubicle dwellers, like the only people in China that are allowed to view my content or government censors and public opinion manipulators. I love you guys, you adorable little cubicle dwellers and espionage actors. Thanks for the comments, all your little pro-China comments. I appreciate the engagement. But also, let me just say this. Taiwan is a country, and if China doesn't want the whole world to go to shit, don't invade it. There, that's it. Don't invade Taiwan. Leave them alone. It's just a little island. Show me on the doll where the island has hurt you. What a concept. Oh, by the way, while we're on the subject, let's not bomb Venezuela either. Let's not do that. Meanwhile, India's trade deficit widens to a record after exports plunge. This is an interesting story because this is the overlap of the run-up in precious metals and the trade war, all neatly packaged into one little story in Bloomberg. India's trade deficit widened to a record last month after exports plunged the most in more than a year following higher U.S. tariffs, while gold imports surged. The gap between exports and imports stood at $41.68 billion last month, according to official data on Monday, far above the $30 billion deficit forecast by economists in Bloomberg. Exports contracted almost 12% from a year earlier, while imports grew at a steady pace of more than 16%. This is one of the things that is contributing to the decline of the rupee here. U.S. President Trump slapped 50% tariffs on Indian goods in August, roiling financial markets and denting growth prospects for the South Asian nation. The record trade gap puts further pressure on the rupee, which is down 3.5% against the dollar this year and trading close to a record low. Trade Secretary Rajesh Agrawal said Monday that the rise in imports was due to higher prices for gold, which reached a record in October, and silver. Demand for gold also typically rises during India's religious festival of Diwali, which took place last month, while a reduction in the goods and services tax in September helped to boost overall spending. And along those lines, guys, I think this story is related here. India restricts imports of platinum jewelry until next April. We don't need to get too deep in the weeds in this because I'm pretty sure the last article summarized everything that's happening here. But this is a little bit of protectionist policy from the Indians here, trying to restrict the platinum. We have seen an uptick in platinum interest in places like India, which typically are just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs over gold. But since gold ran so much earlier this year, we saw more interest in things like silver and things like platinum. And so now India is placing these restrictions on jewelry imports, trying to contain the blowout in their trade deficit. And we got an interesting one from the Bond King, Jeff Gundlach here. This is an interesting story this morning. Jeff Gundlach warns of garbage lending as private credit booms. And, garbage lending has been something we've been warning about on this channel quite a bit as well. In markets awash in garbage lending and unhealthy valuations, Jeffrey Gundlach is keeping his strategy simple. Load up on cash and stay away from private credit. One of Wall Street's bond kings is spotting overpriced assets almost everywhere he looks. In an episode of the Odd Lots podcast recorded to mark the show's 10-year anniversary, Gundlach called out nosebleed valuations in the equity markets and warned investors against incredibly speculative bets. The Double Line Capital founder recommends a 20% cash position to hedge against a market implosion, one he sees brewing in unsafe lending to private companies and overblown hopes for artificial intelligence. The health of the equity market in the United States is among the least healthy in my entire career, Gundlach said. Yikes. The market is incredibly speculative, and speculative markets always go to insanely high levels. It happens every time. The veteran debt investor is concerned the $1.7 trillion private credit market is engaged in garbage lending that could tip global markets into their next meltdown. The collapse of auto lender Tricolor Holdings and car part supplier First Brands Group has lent new urgency to what's an oft-repeated narrative for Gundlach. The next big crisis in the financial markets is going to be private credit, he said. It has the same trappings as subprime mortgage repackaging had in 2006. Yikes. Very yikes, Mr. Gundlach. Very yikes. And again, guys, I've been warning about that for a while. Private credit remains one of those big risks, another bubble. And this is what they're using to inflate the AI bubble now. A bunch of people pretending to be banks that don't know how to be banks, lending other people's money to build out data centers that there is no viable business case to support its build out. Also, no power available on the grid to use the things. What's the worst thing that could happen? And last but not least, we've got Trump reverses stance on Epstein records and presses Republicans to support the release. All right, look, this is stupid. This whole thing has been so stupid. Just release it all. Unredacted, all of it. I don't care if there's intelligence names in there. I don't care if this was an Israeli operation or if it was a CIA operation. At this point, who gives a shit? There's too much crap. Stop blacking things out. Stop releasing only the names of your political rivals and not the names of your political allies. Dump it all. Let's prosecute the people that are on the list. I don't care if it's somebody I voted for. If they're on the list, prosecute them too. Let's put this crap behind us already. This is so stupid. And in my opinion, what's going on here is a bluff. I think he's bluffing. I think he's saying, go ahead, release the documents. I know you won't because you're all on it. I think that's what he's saying. And I think he's saying it because he's on it too. And he's taking heat for it politically. There was this big blow up between Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's like the AOC on the right over the weekend. Who cares? Just dump it all. Just get it out there. I mean, the leadership in this world is so terrible universally. Would it really suck if it took all of them down? Maybe the people who take their place would be better. Hey, I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. Excuse me. Got a frog in my throat this morning. I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Metal Seer. Thank you so much, sir, for supporting the channel. who gifted five Nobody Special Finance memberships. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you five new melon heads. Be sure and say thank you to Metal Seer in the comments. Appreciate that very much. Charles G says the Fed can't trade stocks, but Congress can. Nah, how about none of them should? How about none of them can? How about a ban on trading stocks for anybody in any position of political appointment? Or, I don't know, just don't. For crying out loud. How ridiculous is this? What are we, like 2 years removed from the last two? There was two or three Fed governors had to retire in 2022 or 23 over this same thing. And now Kugler's doing it. And it's not even the first time Kugler did it. Why wasn't Kugler fired the last time she did this? This is unreal. What corrupt scumbags these Fed governors are. And look, this isn't some unimportant post, guys. If you're pissed off every time they give you your total at the supermarket, or if you get your electric bill and you can't imagine how it's gone up by so much, or your property taxes have risen again. It's people like Adriana Kugler is the reason that's happening. You know that, right? Like, they're the ones that are doing this. So when she's trading stocks in and around decisions that she's making against the rules, including during blackout periods where she's not allowed to trade anything, you should be pissed about that. Like legitimately pissed, not like fake manufactured outrage over somebody said something or made a joke on Twitter 20 years ago that's now deemed to be too sensitive. No, like legitimately outraged because they're stealing your future from you. But hey, what do I know? We don't teach finance or basic understanding of interest rates and asset prices in our education system. So why would anybody be upset about that? Thank you, Charles G. I agree very much, sir. Congress shouldn't be trading either. Madison Hype says, this is the best show. Enjoying your work 50 year. Ah, it's the 50 year. Is that the 50-year mortgage we're referring to there, Madison? Yeah, the 50-year mortgage. We talked about that in that interview I did with Travis from Real Estate Mindset and Mitch Vexler last week. I highly recommend that. Between the 50-year mortgage and the increase in property taxes being driven by nothing but inflation-induced increases in home values, this is nothing more than feudalism. And they're arbitrary raising your cost of owning a home. Even if you bought your home outright, they could still price you out of it just with the property taxes. So, yeah, I agree. A 50-year mortgage there, that's a stupid idea. And it's only the second dumbest thing that Bill Pulte said 2 weeks ago was the 50-year mortgage. The other being that Fannie and Freddie were going to take stakes in tech startups. Oh, yeah, let's have Fannie and Freddie, which are supposed to be guaranteeing home affordability for Americans. How's that going? Let's have them buy a stake in OpenAI so Sam Altman can continue to pour trillions of dollars into his stupid dystopian technocratic science project at the taxpayers' expense. Gag me with this stuff. Oh, thank you, Madison. You guys are pushing my buttons this morning, but it's in a good way. Some buttons should be pushed. Nashville Pasta Man, what's going on? He's been a melonhead for 21 months since the beginning, he says. More red flags than a Chinese parade. Very good. You like that one? I made that one up all by myself. Thank you. Although it's not the first time I've made that joke. When you got a good one, you might as well just use it over and over again until people get sick of hearing it. Thank you so much, Pasta Man. I appreciate that very much. Charles G is back again. Says, did you see what happened in Mexico last weekend? Yes, I did. There were Gen Z riots in Mexico, ostensibly protesting corruption and crime. Look, guys, these Gen Z riots are becoming really common. We saw them in Madagascar. Where else did we see them in? Was it Bangladesh? I think it was Bangladesh. No, Nepal was the other one. They actually toppled the government in Nepal. Gen Z is pissed. And, man, I tell you, you think millennials were ornery bunch? You should see what Gen Z is capable of. And let me ask you this. Are they wrong? I mean, like, yeah, that whole, like, bootstrap shit, I get that. I mean, I get down with that. Like, I've done hard work before. I was a commercial fisherman. Hard work, 20-hour days, the most dangerous job in the world. I get the whole bootstrap argument. But you cannot pick yourself up by your bootstraps when there's no job available and when the price of assets is rising faster than wages. It does not matter how hard you work in that environment. I'm not saying don't work hard. I'm not saying give up and go on the government dole and go vote for Zoran Mamdani and hope the sickle and hammer helps you. It won't. But at the same time, I think the anger is justified here. And keep treating people like cattle, and eventually the cattle's going to stampede. And, you know, I don't know what to tell somebody like that, like a Gen Zer who's saying it's hopeless. I'd love to be like, no, it's not hopeless. Work your butt off and you'll be fine. I can't guarantee that. You need to work your butt off, but you also need to be very smart. And you also, unfortunately, need to take risk. And that sucks. You shouldn't have to do that. If you want to just live a middle-class life, make some money, set a little bit aside for the future, and not be living in absolute squalor, you should be able to do that. And unfortunately, the system we have now takes advantage of people who do that, and it pisses me off. And we're getting riots all over the world because of it. Guys, political violence is becoming increasingly normal. The torches and pitchforks are coming out, and the guillotines come right behind those, guys. Be careful. Be careful what you're doing here. Thanks again, Charles. Citrus Squeeze says, Jack, you the man. Well, I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Thank you very much, you orange squeeze SOBU. Appreciate that very much. Crusty White Bread, thank you, sir, says, I need a tinfoil ball cap and a rando t-shirt. Well, we're talking about Epstein. We're talking about riots all over the world and guillotines. We got kind of dark today. Yeah, why not throw the tinfoil hat on? Guys, I'm still having issues with the merch vendor. I am trying to work through them, and I know a lot of people want the tinfoil hat, and I know M&J dies on the inside a little bit every time she reads that, but we're working the problem. It's a big problem, and people suck at their jobs. You know, I've done a couple of test cases trying to order some of this stuff and just see if I can get it. And it takes months and months, and in some cases, they never ship the stuff. And I got to file claims to get my money back and back charges. Until I find somebody that's going to actually fill the orders, I'm not going to put that up there. Sorry. Thank you very much, though. I appreciate that, Crusty White Bread. Thank you for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the algorithm. You know all that good stuff. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Thank you, everybody, for the super chats. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. And everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.